Look up there in the sky. It's a bird, a plane. It's Handsome Boys Comics Hour.
Those boys are so handsome.
One writer.
One artist.
One weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I'm your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric C. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. Hey guys, hey handsomeites.
That's all we're going to say.
Just Merry Christmas.
Ah, well.
It is, but before you hear us again, it will be Christmas will have come and gone. So we'll say it now. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
And a Happy New Year. But
do we record before New Year? I don't know how days work.
We're not going to. We're going to record after for the next one.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So, yeah, to get that out of the way, programming note, we are taking Christmas weekend off. And then we'll be back for the weekend after New Year's. Because New Year's is on a Thursday as well, so we'll be back with the Handies, our awards show.
Mm-hmm. Come get yourself a handy.
Yeah, we got to start debating who gets a handy and who doesn't.
It's always good discussion to be had.
And the most prized award in comics, a handy from Eric and Robbie.
I know everyone wants one from me.
I know.
Everyone's
double fisted.
Just aching with it. Oh, yeah.
I think we've only had one award show. I think Brian K. Vaughn has got the most handies out of it.
He got very chafed, I think.
I think he got at least three of them. Three handies.
Yeah.
He may get the same amount this year. Don't get too excited, Brian K. Vaughn.
Say what you will. He's got endurance.
Yeah. He does. He's in it for the long haul. But we got a great show for you. We are recording, strangely enough, on a Thursday night, much in advance of the weekend, because Eric's gone off to, you know, some place where they don't have technology.
Oh, they do. I just don't like you.
Oh, okay. That's fine. I got Christmas shopping to do anyway. We got some Stoko to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Through Boy Book Club. Some wonton soup.
Delicious.
I have some questions for Eric about it.
Well, I'm the person to ask. I cannot wait for it to be bombarded with your questions.
Well, you're going to give me an answer, so I'm going to go, no, you're wrong. But
well, I have heard it before, and it usually turns out you're wrong, so it's okay.
I mean, considering it's Thursday and we haven't done anything yet this week, we're going to talk a lot of comic news, checking in. But first of all, before we get any of that stuff, it's time for the floppiest part of the week. It's time for weekly floppies. Man, that noise is so good.
It's the gooderest.
Warms my heart.
You don't have a heart.
Well, you found me out.
Yep.
First up this week is DC. We have Batman, number 37. Written by Scott Snyder, pencils by Greg Pulu, inks Danny Meekie, colors FCO Flacentia, letters Desi Ciente and Taylor Esposito. What are they doing with the Joker? Eric, what's happening here?
I don't know what that means. This is like a weird point to jump in. This is like almost this. What is with DC and
the viruses?
These virus storylines?
Yeah, there's two of them going on in the two biggest books, Justice League and Batman.
Yeah.
Both are having cities overrun with viruses.
Had you read any of the previous issues to this that we had missed?
There's been one in between. We did not read part two of Endgame.
Okay. I'm just saying, like,
no,
Bruce Wayne is, like, catatonic and being wheeled around in a Segway, and then he's like, well, I guess I'm not going to do this anymore. And Joker's got the sides of his head shaved. I don't know what's going on.
He has that undercut haircut because he's cool, right? Hipster Joker.
Yeah, he's a male model.
But like, are they like, between this and the backstory, the little eight page story or whatever in the end, are they like making Joker immortal?
Apparently.
I don't like, if that's a fake out, okay, I get it. But it's seeming, with that story, especially the story at the end, the little, you know, 8-page story by James Tynion IV and John McCrae, seems like they're trying to, like, posit that Joker has always existed for, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this comic looks really nice, even though Bruce Wayne still looks like he's 17 years old. But the story is not amazing to me.
I think that's being kind.
Okay. I was being kind. I was trying to break it soft. It just, yeah, I don't know.
This is not this team's strongest effort. Capullo is growing on me. I did not really like was it year zero or zero year?
0 year.
Zero. Neither. Whatever. I did not particularly, I was not overwhelmed by it. I didn't think it was amazing, but I am liking him more and more, but I still have, I don't know. I'm similarly underwhelmed, I suppose. And yeah. The story follows suit with the art. It's, there's nothing particularly amazing about this.
It just seems like they did it, before 0 year, before that whole year of Batman origin, they did a Joker story. Now they're doing another Joker story. Apparently Scott Snyder's last Joker story. But the end of the last one, Joker fell off a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, he's back and he gets shot in the chest. Joker's like not even a person, he's like a entity or something. I don't understand the point of any of it. Seems like this is a story that's been told before. Hell, this is the movie Batman.
Mm-hmm. It feels very movie Batman. Something about the storytelling. It looks like he wishes he was rather writing a Batman movie than a Batman comic. Don't you think that the whole idea of making the Joker immortal, whether that is a red herring or that's the truth, do you not think that that completely invalidates the whole Batman-Joker rivalry? That the whole idea is that Batman can't cross that line, and yet he's always plagued by the Joker?
Yeah.
And now the Joker can't be killed, so Batman's just a fucking idiot.
Yeah, we'll be fighting forever thing. Yeah, exactly. Joker has to be mortal. Has to appear, that's the whole thing, is that he's physically vulnerable. Making him, not vulnerable physically is missing the point. Batman is a big strapping dude. Joker is not a strong person, he's just a lunatic. Who likes punishment. Likes pushing people. Having him, get shot in the chest and then just get up with an axe and beat Jim Gordon, whatever. Again, this art is really, really nice. I think Capullo is continuing to do great work on this, but the story is underwhelming to me, and I can't recommend it, especially with the fact there's a Justice League story going on right now that is also a virus story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you think they're just trying to draw on the zeitgeist? Like, you know, the Ebola scare. So they're like, let's put a bunch of viruses in there. Because when has Joker ever done a virus? It's always been like his laughing gas.
There, it's the next extension of that.
It's stupid though. Not that I'm like an expert on, you know, X number of years of Batman comics, but to my knowledge, it's been laughing gas. That was always the gag. That was always his shtick.
Yeah, it is, and it's kind of the natural extension is here. Let's just make it a virus instead. But having the similar thing in Justice League, and I doubt the Ebola thing had anything to do with it because this is in production probably long before that was even in the news, or at least it had to be written and, you know, drawn and colored and all that. So it would have had to I don't know, they would have added some kind of premonition that it was going to be important, but...
Well, do you think it's just trying to make Joker zombies? Because I got both of those things from this.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I didn't even think about it that much.
This has been a lot of discussion for a book that we mutually agree is bad.
No, yeah. I think we can...
Or lukewarm at best.
Yeah, I can... I'm a do not buy.
Yeah.
I'm pretty confident in that.
Yes.
It's a shame because people praise Snyder for his Batman. I do not. Mm-hmm. And he's... elsewhere, I have enjoyed his writing, but this is... I don't know. I've never really liked his... It doesn't help that Bruce Wayne looks so young.
You always... You hate that.
I do.
You talk about it every time.
I think it has something... And I've mentioned this every time we've read a Batman book, that I think I'm getting too old for Batman. Maybe that's it. That I'm older than Batman now. It makes no sense. Like, why am I cheering for Batman? I don't care about him. Yep. Like, he's a young kid. I don't... Whatever.
Batman's like, I don't picture, bat baby. That's it.
Batman's always been older than me, and that's always... He should always be older than me. Like, in my mind's eye. Like, Peter Parker is always younger than me, and Bruce Wayne is always older. So to make him 25 years old just feels strange. I don't know. But do not buy.
You want him acting like Bat Dad and Hush.
No, I don't want Hush Bat Dad. Don't want that either. I want Detective Comics Batman. That detective
That's good Batman.
Buccioletto and Manipal. Those guys. I like their Batman. Next up, it's a Christmas miracle. We got another issue of Sandman Overture.
I was going to say, we manage to read all 9 or 10 volumes of The Sandman since they started publishing these?
Yes, we have. We did those in between the first and second issues, I think.
Wow.
I want to say it was between in 2 issues of this comic book.
But it's not like we did it in a week either. We spaced that shit out.
That was over a month, 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
We did 2 volumes a week. So, yeah, this is Sandman Overture number 4, written by Neil Gaiman. I don't think there is actually a credits page in this somewhere. It could be tangled up in the, there it is. It's on a rock on page.
It's on a rock.
It is. Gaiman typed. Here, I'm going to read it. Williams III etched, Stewart toned, Klein stamped, Miller labeled, Bond approved.
That's ridiculous.
I don't, whatever, you guys can.
You can decode that. Whatever you want.
Yeah, I don't know what kind of, the guy's names on the front cover are Neil Gaiman, J.H. Williams III, and Dave Stewart.
Yeah, you probably come into this knowing who the hell did it already. It.
And Todd Klein is doing the letters because he always letters for Neil Gaiman.
And, I don't know, he's a busy motherfucker.
No, he's the letterer.
Yeah, it seems like there's, I don't know, there's maybe a half dozen guys that seem to letter everything in comics.
Yeah, exactly. And he's the grandfather of lettering, modern lettering.
Absolutely,
basically.
He is.
This is down the wormhole, this comic book. You're going to have to reread 1 through 3 to get, I had to at least.
I was right there.
Really?
Yeah.
I had forgotten it. It happened so long ago. I was kind of lost.
It was 40 years ago to this day. On a night just like this.
A Christmas Carol is going to be written around this comic book.
Yeah, I know.
But Morpheus and Cat Morpheus and the little girl with a blue girl with a triangle on her forehead are going to a star world, and also meeting Morpheus's father.
Well, I think it's told, it's sort of drifting in and out of the time. The father, the whole father vignette was what led him, I think, to the Star Graveyard, or his whole mission. It's basically what led him to that.
Okay,
put him on this path. That was my understanding. And it's a little, I hate to use the word nebulous, but I'm looking at all this nebulous shit.
It's pretty, I'm not going to disagree with you.
It's probably intentional.
Yes.
But It's the kind of thing, like, no one would enjoy this book unless they were fans of the original series.
Yes,
and
I agree.
I think that you, having read the, all those books with me, I'm curious if you actually take anything from this, because I see this, I'm like, well, the Endless have a father. That's really interesting, and it's time. That actually kind of makes sense. And then, you know, did you see that the son from Oa showed up?
Where?
His name is Sto-Oa or something.
Oh,
trying
okay.
to find him. He's the he's the green star.
Oh, right. Yes, I saw it.
That Morpheus is talking to. He meets, or Sto-Oa is a character in Endless Nights as well.
The art is, of course, beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
J.S. Williams III is...
It's wonderful.
Yeah, he's great. It's the layouts, and I mean, most of it is done across, you know, 2-page spreads.
Yeah.
I think everything is actually
most
honestly.
Of right. The three other books were very similarly done.
Yeah, and it, you know, it looks gorgeous, but I don't know. Gaiman is starting to. I mean, the first three books are, for all their kind of complex layouts and art and everything, their storytelling is relatively easy to follow. And this one, you're starting. He's going further away, and it. With that, my interest is going further away. I understand the thing about making it like rotating panels and everything, so text is upside down. I don't like flipping my comic books around to read them.
No.
And I don't know why the star people are angry at Morpheus. Do you know why? Can you tell me?
Well, he is kind of a dick.
Well, aside from that.
I don't know what to tell you.
Okay. I don't.
When I opened this up to discuss it with you, I suddenly realized I sort of had no idea that I couldn't really articulate anything about it. I walked away from it thinking I understood it, but I can't really tell you the motivations or any of that stuff. I don't know.
Because the father stuff, I enjoyed that. I like that. And you're right. It's interesting seeing. I would like to see more about that relationship. Because they don't really touch upon that at all. And
the whole scene with the first vortex. And I think that is part of what this is all about. You remember the Rose Walker story, correct?
Yes.
Rose Walker was a vortex, and she was destroying the Dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
And this is basically what's happening in this whole flashback sequence, that there was this woman that was a vortex, and she started basically, it was, her dreams basically were her own dreaming. They were walled off, and then the walls started to break down and destroy the Dreaming, and it infected the whole world that they're on, and apparently he did not go far enough. He had to destroy the whole world and the star.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what all this is this infected star he's come to destroy because it's going to destroy reality. That's what I came away with. That's as soon as I started talking to you, I forgot all of that, and now it's come back to me.
I didn't get any of that.
I was going to say, yeah.
The star connection. The star, like, I understood everything about the, you know, the vortex and his father and that. I understood. I did not understand the connection to the star people and why they're so angry and why, but they invite him in and then they imprison him, I guess. But I still say this book is worth reading.
Yeah.
But I don't.
If I was going to imagine anything, I would imagine the star people are angry at him. Because he's basically created this mentally ill star that they keep in prison. And or it's about to destroy all of reality. And it's Morpheus's fault.
Yeah. But, I mean, the art is so gorgeous. It's hard not to even if the story was complete nonsense. But, you know, I think it's, like you said, this is for fans of Sandman. Which I can't imagine anyone who's not buying this isn't already that. So I'm a buy.
Yeah.
For whatever that means. I mean, if you're buying this book, it's because, hey, I like the Sandman. Which is a lot of people, so. And it's gorgeous, and, you know, you don't have to worry about having to spend a lot of money on it, because the next issue is not going to come out till Valentine's Day or later, so.
Yep. It's like the Long Halloween. Neil Gaiman commits a crime and writes a comic every holiday.
Neil Calendar Gaiman?
Yeah. They call him the Calendar Man.
Neil Calendar Man?
Mm-hmm.
Still Neil Gaiman?
Yeah, it's complicated.
Yeah, okay. So, we're a double buy. It's Sandman. I think that's what we come down to. Hey! Buy it! Sandman!
Yeah, we could have said it a lot simpler.
We could have.
But I couldn't have... Everyone would have missed out me explaining the book for everyone.
Yeah, exactly. I needed it. I didn't know what was happening.
So what are all these Peter Max drawings?
So we're double by Sandman Overture number 4. Next up, our Indie Book of the Week, Rumble number 1. Co-creators John Arcudi and James Herron. I think James Herron is the artist of the two. I think. Or is it the other way around? No, Arcudi is the writer, Herron is the artist. But I imagine they co-plotted or whatever.
Yeah.
Here, I will describe what Image builds the series as. That I just read, and I think it's really weird.
Well.
A Scarecrow Conan fighting in a Louis C.K. TV show directed by David Fincher.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a very strange comic where the main person we're following is this barman who's encountering a scarecrow thing.
Mm-hmm.
And who chops off some guy's arm. And then there a swamp guy comes out, and then there's demons, and then the scare. I don't know. It's a lot of stuff happens that I don't know how or why.
Yeah, people were. I was hearing a lot of rumbling about this book. I know. It's not even a good joke, but it came to me, and I can't not say it.
I'll let it go.
I know. I don't have to jump in the garbage can this time.
No, not this time.
I feel good about that.
Maybe later.
So, I was hearing a lot of noise about this. A lot of people were saying how good it is, how interesting it is, how, you know, whatever. A lot of people were teasing it. I don't know. It wasn't exactly what I was expecting. I mean, it's fun and really looks great.
Yes.
This is easily. I mean, Sandman Overture is a beautiful book. I prefer the way this looks, just because I like cartoons and digital art, and this is better storytelling, you know, for the sake of visual storytelling. I mean, J.H. Williams is trying to make it very opaque storytelling. He's trying to make it experimental. He's trying to make it, oh, look at how weird I could make this. I don't know. I kind of expected this to be a little tighter. It's really just sort of throwing a bunch of weird shit at you, and you sort of don't know where you stand on this. You don't know if this goofy human guy is the main character, or, you know, are we gonna... I don't know. What do you think?
I enjoy this book a lot. There's a lot of, like, fun character in it.
Yeah, it does. That really is the draw of this, is it has a lot of character.
Like, there's, like, a one shot, just a shot of, like, a dude. He's trying to get his buddy to come down from his, like, his apartment. And he's asleep on the couch, eating from a bag of something called Bunions, with Paul Bunyan on the cover, on the front of the little bag.
That's like a motif in this book for some odd reason.
He has a tattoo that on his chest that says, "Does this tattoo make me look tough?"
Mm-hmm.
And like the monsters, these monsters that he encounters are weird and quirky and they're not just like, "Ah, I'm gonna eat you." They're like, "Hey, what are you?" They're like kind of, you know, their personality.
Yeah.
everything has personality. All these weird guys, all these characters. Like, there's a weird cat lady. It's like me when I'm like 70.
And you finally get that sex change?
No, I think I'm just gonna be dressed in drag.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
that's different.
Maybe, but
maybe
the combat's, you know, the when there's fighting, it's like very fast and kinetic, and
mm-hmm.
I'm intrigued by what this book is, but I don't know what this book is aside from a weird personality character comic, like fun. It looks really nice. It doesn't really say what it is, though.
Do you know what it is? Have you ever seen The Triplets of Belleville?
I should have seen it. I've not seen it.
This is kind of that this is that, but sort of in action comic book form. Because it seems like it's mostly about showing you a lot of weird characters and a lot of weird shit happening.
Mm-hmm.
And not really about, like, not really big on story or what you would call character work. It's just more about weird drawings and fun stuff.
Do you think that is what this book is going to be?
I don't know. It's entirely possible they could tighten this up and have a real story, but it's very unclear at this point. This could stay just as unfocused, or this could tighten up tremendously. And everything in this issue that's introduced, you're like, oh, well, you know, she ended up doing this, and the fat guy with the tattoo on his stomach ended up doing this, and blah, 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 blah. But right now it just seems like a bunch of little random vignettes thrown together, like, you know, the two guys in the swamp and a cat lady, and it's all very scattered.
Yeah. Seeing all that, I would buy a second issue.
Absolutely.
It's fun. I don't know what the hell is going to happen, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think.
No, it's not.
They could probably make a more cohesive thesis statement about what your first, you know, what your comic's going to be about. But I think the art's really nice, and there's a lot of personality in it, and that sells it enough, I guess. The weird mm-hmm. kind of, maybe it's just, this is, then the world is the comic, and it's not really about, I don't know. From reading this article, it seems like that Scarecrow is going to be the main guiding force. So maybe it's just following him around.
Right. And I think you saying that kind of made me, yeah. Who the hell knows?
Right. But still, double buy.
Yeah.
It raises these questions in an interesting way, at least. I mean, we want to know these things because we're interested. Next up is our Marvel Books of the Week. We have Moon Knight, number 10, written by Brian Wood, artist Greg Smallwood with Giuseppe Cumancalli, Jordi E. Belair doing colors, Travis Lanham on letters. We've missed a few issues of this. Coming back to it, I just want to check in, see where it's at after I heard mm-hmm. that recently broke the news that after, I think, issue 11 or 12, Colin Bunn is going to come on this book with another art. Like, that's what this book's going to be, apparently, is like, you know, they're going to have one person do 5-6 issues, tell their even maybe single stories or one arc, you know, one little adventure story involving Moon Knight, and then it's going to be like a highlighter for interesting creative teams. So I thought, well, we'll jump on board, see what's happening in the book now. Khonshu has gone to someone else, has left Mark Spector, at least for the moment. And but it's still kind of becoming a, I don't know, kind of ethical questions about who to kill and who kills and stuff like that. In this, Khonshu is basically trying to get a security guard for the UN to kill a African warlord, as far as I can tell. And now, but Khonshu is dressed like almost like a nun. It's a medic or a nun, or I don't know how to.
Was it not the exact costume that he wore in Ghost Knucks?
No, that's the head. Is head the head stuff is all different. I don't think that's the same. Maybe it's just the different artists is confusing me. Let me look real quick. I have it in front of me.
I remembered it looking mostly just like that.
It does have that. It does have that the bird skull, but yeah. I don't think it has that like weird headdress like that. No, it's the head is different. Like they're wearing more like a hood in the Ghost Knights issue, and this is it looks almost like a nun's like a. What do you call their outfit?
They have a name. Habit.
A habit. Yeah, it looks almost like a habit. But I'm not sure what it's really supposed to intend. But what do you think, Eric?
Well, I sort of like you missed out on most of the Sandman. I think I missed out on most of this. I thought this was just some goofy one-shot story where Moon Knight's like, I'm wearing my Ghost Knux gear and I'm going to talk to this woman. You should shoot somebody. And then she didn't shoot him.
Nope. But Mark Spector.
And then I was confused about who that was at the end.
No, it's Mark Spector. You got to read the summary page.
I know. It was a really inopportune time to skip that. I assumed it was the same as all the other ones, which was just like, oh, this crazy guy.
No.
Egypt.
It does not say it does say this is what happened next, but it does not say the typical spiel.
Yeah, I skipped right the hell over it. And I took nothing away from this. I don't know. I feel warmed up to it a lot more now that you have explained to me how to read comic books.
Well, they are. You're not supposed to read every comic book like it's from DC, Eric.
I guess so. Oh, that's right. I tried to read this one upside down and spinning around. That's why I could read The Sandman, and I couldn't read this.
But it's interesting. I'm interested to see where it goes. I'm certainly not as strong on it as I was those first six issues. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's possible for me to be as strong on it. I mean, those six issues, especially Ghost Knux, my baby. You know, I fully expect Khonshu to be returned to Mark Spector by the end of this little story. But I am interested to see if it traveling around and all that. I like the art. I like that the writer lets the artist tell the story without. And that is something that Brian Wood has sort of taken the cue from Ellis's short run on this was, let the art tell the story, a lot of it,
mm-hmm.
A lot of it's not narrated. I'm a buy maybe a two on the mush meter.
It's not a terrible comic. I think I. The fact that it's got enough depth that I can read it again to figure some things out, I think is probably a testament that it's worth it. It's got depth. It's got something there. It's a lot better than I thought it was.
What are we on the mush meter?
I'm slightly mushier, but I'm.
So three,
I'm
four?
On. Yeah. Three. We'll go three. Oh, I wouldn't. Three I'm not. I'm not going four.
Okay.
I'm not going four on the mush meter.
Okay, so we're a double buy with a two mm-hmm. and a three on the mush. That's a two and a half on the mush meter.
That is light to modest mushiness.
Yeah, it's not as we've been way mushier.
Yes,
I'm liking this.
Oh man, that's
okay.
Beautiful.
So. Next book up, Storm number 6, written by Greg Pak, pencils by Al Barrionuevo, inks by Tom Palmer, colors Ruth Redmond, letters Joe Sabino. We've not been reading Storm lately. I think we read issue 3 was our last one, which we were a little down on compared to the really strong uh-huh. issues of 1 and 2. Storm has gone to Japan because Logan died, because uh-huh. they were having a thing when he died. And now she did stuff in Japan. She's on her way back. Airplane drama.
Yes.
What you say is going to influence me, Eric. So what do you think? What are your thoughts on this?
I don't think this is anywhere near as good as it should be. It's not like it's overwhelmingly bad. It's a little dopey. It's not as wonderful a story as it should be. I feel like Storm really deserves a top tier book, and this is not it. This is a nicely drawn Bush League comic book, in my opinion.
What do you mean by that?
Like, it's certainly trying things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just doesn't quite seem to accomplish them. You know?
Yeah.
Maybe it's trying to do too much and then is too heavy-handed, you know, in working through the things that it's doing. I like this artist, too. I think there should be significantly less male view in a woman-led comic book. I don't particularly have a problem with, you know, sexy girl drawings, but I do think they should come into books thinking that women are more likely to read a book that is led by a woman, so there should be less Miranda shots.
I generally agree with everything you're saying.
Yes.
This book is not what I thought it was when I read the... looking at the cover and reading the solicitation,
mm-hmm.
I was expecting, like, a lot less mutants are evil and more like, watch Storm be a badass to take out some, like, terrorists.
Yeah.
I was
barely in this.
Yeah, I was like, I really wanted, like, her, like, flying out, jumping out of an airplane, flying around, like, electrocuting dudes with guns.
Yeah.
Like, instead we got her, a whole bunch of her struggling, and, like, I understand a lot of appeal of that is, like, you know, having a flawed, a character, or what's the word you use all the time?
Vulnerable.
I can respect the fact that they want to make her vulnerable, but having her, like, a dude just kick her in the leg, and she falls down,
yeah,
and she, like, weakly, I'm like, it's not, like, I want my superheroes just to be badasses.
Yeah.
Like, and, like, I do like the fact that, you know, she does, like, she's so strong that she can float this airplane out and make it, but that's not as, like, I was expecting, like, that terrible airplane movie with Steven Seagal, but with Storm on it.
That would be good. I would like that. Then she can do Taken.
Yes, exactly. Let's have a Storm as an action hero, but
yeah.
I don't... They do their, like, oh, her leg is her, and she can't, like... Why can't she control her powers? Why is she having so much trouble with that? Like, Storm is an elder X-Men. She has led the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that she can zap a dude if she needs to. Like, it just seems to put too much...
Yeah.
Too much hardship on her, when I just want her to look awesome. I think that's my problem with it.
That's a really funny critique, but I support you on that. You know, I read, do you remember the Finches, Wonder Woman? Yeah.
Yeah.
That we were both sort of, we were a little soft on. I read a scathing review about how it was the most sexist, horrible dreck that had ever been written.
Mm-hmm.
And they made a specific point of the shower scene. And after reading that article, I went back and looked at that book. That shower scene shows the back of Wonder Woman's shoulder and, like, her shin.
Mm-hmm.
The first page of this book, you see Storm completely nude.
Yeah, I don't.
Why is no one outraged about this, and we're criticizing someone for drawing Wonder Woman's bare shoulder blade?
That was not my problem with that book.
No, there were genuine, like, there's a reason we were soft on it. It was not great. This is similarly not great. And it kind of makes it worse when it's a great character. I mean, you know, not everything can be amazing. Not even someone who can put out good content is always going to be doing something amazing. You know, that's just sort of the nature of creation, is sometimes things work and sometimes they don't. So you kind of have to give people a pass and keep trying stuff. That being said, this is kind of weak, And I don't know. I want to keep checking in because Storm is great, and she deserves to have a real killer run on her own book. But this is, I don't know. I'm a do not buy.
Yeah, I agree with you, which is a shame. I want to like this a lot more than I do.
Absolutely. I think that's the main thing to take away from this is, I don't know. People
like
are,
that first and second issue we liked a lot. And this
they were amazing.
And this is, I don't know. And the rumors are this book is on the chopping block because the sales are down.
I don't doubt that because it's everything's like this.
Yeah. So Double Do Not Buy, Storm number 6. That's with a frowny face on it.
Yeah.
Lastly, an extra, our whenever Ms. Marvel comes around, we inevitably talk about it because we are both reading it anyway. So Ms. Marvel, number 10, I will eventually open it up. Written by G, I can read, I know the credits halfway by heart anyway. Written by G. Willow Wilson, art by Adrian Alfana, Ian Herring doing colors, Joe Caramada on letters. This book is delightful. I like it so much.
It's adorable. Just want to hug it.
Yeah. I mean, whenever it's Alfana doing the art, it's always great. And
it's not like, that other stuff wasn't necessarily bad. I forgot
no, the not at all.
Name because I'm a bad person. But
why?
It's not Adrian Alfana who, he has made this book. I mean, he's as much behind my love of Ms. Marvel as much as G. Willow Wilson is. This book is the unique shining star in the Marvel universe. It is, you already said it was delightful. I will echo that. It is a damned delightful book. I have been pushing it on anyone who has ears. It is so effing good.
I can't think of a superhero book I like more than this.
This book has a robot with a pimp hat and brass knuckles.
You're right, it does.
That is the thing that is in this book.
It's just, we talked about character and personality and Rumble.
Yeah.
This book has that in spades. And a lot. I'm
but
sure
it also has, it has better storytelling. It's more collected.
Yes, it certainly does. The pace is consistent. It steadily raises the stakes. It is Kamala Khan is a likable hero that you're really involved in.
Mm-hmm.
You really want to see what she's doing. You really like her. I did like the dig on how everyone hates millennials. I like the fact that. Because that's been on my mind a little bit lately about how we're all going to hell because we look at our phones too much.
Yeah, well,
I mean,
I know I give you shit about that.
Well, I mean, it's people before there were phones. People read newspapers all the time instead of looking at each other. It's okay to whatever, but
it's okay to hate everyone and ignore everyone.
Precisely, if you feel like it,
live your life ignoring the world.
As long as you're not a battery, don't become a battery.
That's the lesson to learn here.
That's the lesson from Ms. Marvel. Don't be a battery.
You know, I'm really starting I'm starting to think I want to see more things and not just this from G. Willow Wilson. The thing that, if I was going to say any criticism of this, is it kind of feels like she's being reserved. Like she's kind of not taking it as far as it could be. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, it seems like it's very much like, I hate to say it about a comic book that's so good.
Yeah, no, it is so good.
It's very much, it feels like it's on a playbook. Like she knows, like, I'm gonna go exactly by what makes a good superhero comic, I'm gonna do that. And all kudos to her because this is a great comic. But I think that's not a bad thing to do when you're launching a new character, a new property, and it's worked wonderfully so far. It's critically and commercially successful.
Right.
Everyone I know, I tell, hell, read Ms. Marvel. If you like superhero comics, read Ms. Marvel. It's the best. But you say you'd like to see her do more. She's going to be writing one of the X-Men books come March,
mm-hmm.
doing an arc on that. And she was... People criticize Marvel a lot because, yes, they are doing more female-led comics, but their creative teams are not as... There's, of course, a lot less women than there are men. And people are complaining about, you know, there's no women or men. A lot less women at their retreats. Their creative retreats they do twice or whenever, quarterly, or I forget how often they do them. But G. Willow Wilson has signed a Marvel-exclusive contract, and she was at the last retreat, like, last month, or early this month, one or the other. And Mark Waid tweeted about it. He was very happy to see her there. And there's news on the horizon that she's going to be getting a lot more work at Marvel simply because she's signed an exclusive with them. So we'll get to see her do more kinds of books. X-Men, first of all, because it's what I've heard about her arc on that, she's doing an arc on an X, is it just, I think it's adjectiveless X-Men. She's doing an arc on that. And from what I've read, it seems very interesting. And
I think they should.
I'm excited.
They should actually call it adjectiveless X-Men.
Yeah, that'd be good. That'd be a good title. It rolls off the tongue.
Maybe literally X-Men.
Literally X-Men. I think that works better.
I like that. Literally X-Men.
But then
maybe with a comma. Literally comma X-Men.
But then they have a sister book like All New has Uncanny.
Yeah.
They'll have figuratively.
Ooh,
X-Men.
Oh man, this is good.
But we're double buy Ms. Marvel number 10. And I'll go buy all the Ms. Go buy the entire, everything you haven't read of Ms. Marvel, go buy it. The first trade's right. out. Go get it. It's great.
I have made many people. I'm making people read this. I don't know. I will force this book on you.
Yeah. If you're in a comic shop and if you're wondering what to buy, go grab Ms. Marvel. Worth every penny. I also read, I read Captain Marvel number 10, which is the 100th Captain Marvel solo issue. It's the first part of a Christmas story, a Captain Marvel Christmas story. We're checking back in with all the people on Earth, all her buddies on Earth, and see what they're doing. And her villain that had got, you know, her big villain that was on the last issue. That the weird lady that was a millionaire by being a...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Her, she, we're checking... We're,
the evil, we're also, evil, evil Oprah.
Yeah, evil Oprah. We're checking in back with her and all of Cap's friends on Earth. It's a lot of fun. I really like it. I don't remember reading anything else. I probably did. I know you read something else, Eric.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Yeah, I read The Kitchen, number 2.
How was that?
Don't get this book.
Okay. All right. That's what I gleaned from number 1, where you're really hoping, like,
yeah,
maybe 2 will pull it out.
I saw it in the lineup. I'm like, oh God, I want to check it out. No.
No, just a no.
No.
Okay.
No. Just no. Was
yeah.
Really no. You know, people that I like are getting behind this book. There's no reason to read it so far.
Okay.
And maybe, I don't know, maybe this is some grand scheme but I can't imagine. After 2 issues, I am uninterested. And I would like my money back.
Well,
so do not buy it.
You gave it a better shot than I did, because seeing issue 2, I'm like, no, and I'm not even bothering with that. One, it was not there's no promise in 1 to me, so I was just like, bleh.
No.
I spend too much money on comics already. I don't need other books where I'm like, oh, I'll give it a shot. Like, $4 comics, it's hard to, even $3 comics, it's hard to,
yeah, I understand.
It's hard to say, oh, I'll give it a shot, when you're like, I could be reading... There's other books I want to read more that I'm not buying. I think that'll do it for Weekly Floppies, dear Lord.
I have another book.
You do? What's that?
Well, I didn't actually read it, but I bought Wayward 5, and now I have to buy Wayward 4 because I missed an issue.
Oh, okay.
So that's why I have not read it.
Well, if we're at Confession Corner, I bought this week's Elektra. I did not buy the Elektra beforehand, which is, this is the second part of that story. So
we're done.
I'm gonna buy the Elektra before it.
Yep.
It has Del Mundo back on the art, so I'm excited about it.
There you go.
He's done a good job. So with that, weekly floppies is over. We're already, we're clocking in almost an hour. I'll have to cut us down.
You'll have to trim the fat.
I will. But with that, floppy's part of the week is over. You guys take that into Christmas with you, in New Year's, by the way.
Put that in your stocking.
Put it in your stocking. We're going to move over to our next segment, and that segment is checking in. I think that since it's a very short week, we've only had 4 days since our last. I have one podcast to talk about, and then I think we're just going to chat about a bunch of comic news. Or not comic news. Things are grinding our gears. Whatever. But I have a podcast to talk about. I've been a new episode just came out today, as Thursday, the 18th, as the time of recording. It is called The Adventure Zone. It is another D&D live play podcast. I guess I just can't get enough of them. It's three brothers and a dad, their dad, playing D&D. Most of them for the first time. And my Google just crashed, so that's good.
how did you crash Google? That's just weird.
I don't know. Some script is not operating correctly, dear Lord. Stop script. I don't
know. So if anyone else wonders, Robbie is the one that broke Google for everyone.
Yeah, it's like my browser's not happy right now. But it's a live play podcast. Three brothers and their dad. The three brothers are from My Brother, and Me, a fairly popular podcast. It's, one of those faux advice podcasts where they, take questions and then give funny advice. Those guys, they're funny. Their dad is really interesting because he's read a lot of fantasy, but he's never played D&D or roleplay RPGs at all. So it's interesting to see like an older generation. I mean, he's old enough to have played it when he said he's actually met Gygax at a convention once upon a time. So there's that. But it's a lot of fun. It comes out every 2 weeks. So it's not a weekly podcast like a lot of the D&D ones I listen to. These guys have another weekly podcast they do, so I can see that why they schedule it like they do. But it's a lot of fun. I definitely suggest it. It's featured on iTunes right now, which is how I found it. But check it out. Adventure Zone. With that, I think we can officially commence news talk. Christmas news talk. One, I'm really interested about this. When I first heard it, I'm like, if there's one thing that's going to get Eric interested in Archie.
It's not. Really? I do know about Fiona Staples. I even saw before that Sanford Green did a really great cover for this project where he redesigned. And maybe it was just related. I don't know. I have no earthly clue. But he redesigned all the Archie characters, and it looked awesome. And I tweeted at him in all caps, and I'm like, God damn it, Sanford, stop drawing Archie. I don't want to care about Archie.
It's Mark Waid, Fiona Staples, on Archie, rebooting Archie. You know, they're ending they're in the 600s right now. They're going to end those numbers, reboot with a new number one. They've seen the potential with Afterlife with Archie, which has done extraordinarily well for them. And I read an interview with the CEO of Archie Comics. They're still going to release Digest with the old version of Archie, but I'm excited to see what Mark Waid and Fiona, I mean, it's hard to come up with, like, that is a superstar creative team. Fiona's only gonna be on the first three issues. She's not gonna interrupt her saga schedule at all. She's working hard, dear Lord. Yeah. But a new Archie number one, they say they're gonna try and make it more like modern and funny. And I'm interested to see what they do. I'm excited about it. I'm gonna be reading this. We're gonna be reading it just so I can torture Eric with making him read another Archie comic. Come on, it's Mark Waid and Fiona Staples. Come on! You can't, not even a little bit of it. Is it tearing you apart?
It is. It's killing me.
But I'm excited. And I'm gonna make you read it even if you're not.
Even if I'm not reading it.
If you're not excited about it, we're gonna definitely be reading it for the podcast. It's not coming out for like probably 6 months from now, so not really.
Everything
right
in
now.
Comics is announced 100 million years ahead of time.
Precisely. Other news, DC cancellations with quotes around cancellations. Mars solicitations, all these books are absent. I'm going to read a long list. Some of these are probably deserved cancellations. Others, I don't know. We had Aquaman and the Others, which we read one issue, we're not impressed. Secret Origins, also one issue, not impressed. Clarion, haven't looked at it yet. Three Green Lantern books. So Green Lantern Corps, Red Lanterns, and New Guardians. Swamp Thing, World Swine, it's Batman Eternal, Future's End, World's End, Trinity of Sin, Arkham Manor, Batwoman, and Star Spangled War stories featuring G.I. Zombie. Gotta remember that. All are missing from March. A lot of those are weekly books, Batman Eternal, Future's End, World's End, like all those kind of, a lot of those are, you know, were scheduled to end. Arkham Manor's only had two issues come out. Clarion's only had three, so it's a little strange for them to announce a cancellation already. But in March is also an event called Convergence. I don't know if you've read anything about this, Eric. No?
No.
Okay. They've been very mysterious about it. It's going to be running while DC moves to California from New York. So it's going to be like running. They're stacking it up in advance so that they can, you know, move around their offices and resettle and all that. Theoretically, from what I've heard, it's a lot of characters from pre-New 52 having books for a month or so. And people are understanding, people are excited about that because they get to see things they liked about, you know, the DC universe before New 52 just erased everything. But there's rumors that a lot of these books are going to relaunch, or combine in some way, or I don't know. I just find it very, this is, seems very gimmicky to me.
What in comics isn't gimmicky?
I know.
Who shot the Watcher?
I'm a sucker. Yeah. That Original Sin was terrible.
Yes, it was.
And Axis
is super
worse.
Gimmicky.
It's an event comic, and I guess event comics are inherently gimmicky.
Yes.
Some of them aren't bad, though. Many
of them are very good. We've read several. We did Infinity Gauntlet for Book Club, and that
we did.
Was an event book, and it was very good.
Yes, I don't know. But I don't. This is DC doing some tricky stuff with their schedule. I know you wanted to talk about the Spider-Woman costume. Broke today.
Yeah.
New Spider-Woman costume. It looks
like Batgirl.
It does kind of look like Batgirl.
I'm glad you've come around.
Well, I'm not. I never said it didn't. I'm just saying also.
It really sounded like you were arguing with me.
No, I'm just saying the yellow sash thing looks. It's Captain Marvel-y, but
I get that. I mean, if you think of it as like a unitard, yeah, it's very Captain Marvel-y, but
where's that cover?
It's not. It's like there's it's a jacket cover. Like Batgirl.
But also, it also has like the webs under the arm kind of thing going on. It is. They're clearly going like, let's make her look like I don't really care that it rips off Batgirl, because that's a good costume, and this looks better than her current costume. It looks more modern, at least, than her current costume.
Mm-hmm.
A current costume is nothing, it's just,
I never really cared for the old costume. I thought it just didn't suit her, and I thought it was really sort of obnoxious. I thought it was like very garish, but not like in a fun way, like Spider-Man's costume was garish mm-hmm. and fun. It never quite worked for me. We never really talked about the Manera cover. I never really had too much of a problem with it, but I'd like this direction better.
Yeah, me too.
I don't think that every goddamn comic has to be sexy big ass comic. I'm okay with I don't know. I'm okay with more women-led comics being for women. I think that's a good thing.
She looks like a person.
Looking like a person's a good idea. And
the
I
don't like the glasses necessarily.
No, I think they're dorky. I agree.
But everything else is I'm on board with, if it is ripping off. That's fine.
Yeah.
And Batgirl's good. So if you're going to rip something off, at least make it a good thing you're ripping off.
Yeah.
Hopefully her comic book. But I'm not. There is a Spider-Woman comic coming out right now. Greg Land is doing the art. So I'm not.
I should send you the picture Brandon Graham did making fun of it.
Oh God,
it's good. Women read this comic. Let's get Milo Manara and Greg Land to draw it.
That doesn't make any sense at all. Let's draw porn star guy. Let's him draw a comic book.
It'll be written by R beating women.
I was going to check in with an Ink Studs episode, but I couldn't finish it. So, they're talking about Rob Liefeld and how they appreciate Rob Liefeld.
What the hell's wrong with people?
It's Brandon Graham. He's the host. He's hosting it. He hosts the episode special. I was falling asleep at work listening to it.
That's not good.
I mean, it's not entirely their fault. I'm severely addicted to caffeine, so when I don't get enough, I get sleepy, so it's not entirely their fault. But hearing people, like, slobber over Rob Liefeld is not gonna, like, oh, this is an exciting podcast. Mm-hmm. Okay. But with that, we'll move on to our last segment. It is time for Nerd Boy Book Club. Nerd Boy Book Club is part of the show where Eric and I will sign along our collected work and analyze it like you would in a book club. Crazy.
It's a really strange concept.
I know, it's insane. I don't think anyone else has ever thought of it.
Nah.
We are complete originals. This week we're doing Wonton Soup by James Stokoe. This is re-released after the success of Orkstein and Godzilla, Half Century War. They made it into a nice collection, a very, very handsome looking book by Oni Press. Both of us are completely fresh in this. Neither of us have read this. We both owned it and decided to put it in. Let it sit and look at the nice looking book and decide we'll read that eventually. That day is today. There's a lot of Brandon Graham in this. Or there's a lot of Stokoe and Brandon Graham. I don't know how to split it.
I think they just, they cross-pollinate.
Yeah, they're so close. It's just hard to separate them. This is a lot. I don't know. It's the art style is certainly still very Stokoe, but it feels much more influenced by, like, I can see a lot of King City in this.
Yeah, there's the scene at the end where they dress up like soldiers looks just like the soldiers in King City. It looks like he had it open when he was drawing that, or maybe the other way around.
Yeah, it's hard to. I don't know. I'm not going to try and parse out a timeline in this, but. There's a lot of those kind of the visual motifs that I have, come to expect from Brandon Graham, like the little cutaways and like weird made up words that are things. Like, there's a lot of that. Like, you see that in King City, you see it in multiple warheads. This Stokoe is using a lot of that with these. I mean, it makes sense because they're like alien creatures and fruits and stuff like that, but there's certainly a lot of it in here. The story is, like, there's a dude who's, like, a culinary student, but he needs to go see the world, so he becomes a space trucker.
There's not a whole lot else in this.
No, and the second one is, like, a giant drug trip. The second half of this book. Like, the second story is just, like, them, let's do drugs and see what happens. And they get stranded on a world and then try and get out off of it and fight monsters, which is, I enjoy that first story a lot more than that second one.
Yeah, well, I generally, like, I don't really like stoner culture and any stories that revolve around. I agree with you. I didn't really think about it too much. But, I mean, a lot of it just feels very sort of weird and unfocused. Stokoe's not really quite as much of a storyteller, period, in this. Compared to, Orkstein, which I'm very invested in. I really want to see where, you know, where the next ones are going. I can take or leave this in terms of a story. Like, I think it's a wonderful, like, beautiful book. It's a great piece of art, but it's...
That first story, I think it holds up as a, like, a cohesive story to me. It seems like it has a direction. Like, here is a guy. He is a trucker. He's out in space. He's good at cooking. Uh-oh, we have to go back to this planet and learn about his past. Oh, he's a culinary student. He has a culinary throwdown. He's like a legend there. We meet his old teacher. He has like an Iron Chef competition with these twins.
Yeah.
Which is a really spectacular sequence. I really, really enjoy everything that happens there. The art is really... It felt like...
Are you thinking of the Budokai? That was in Dragon Ball.
But it felt like that sequence in particular felt very like his art style is definitely manga and more, you know.
Oh yeah, I mean you look at this whole book. Yeah. Just the whole idea of a creator-owned black and white with halftones comic book. This is pure manga. Even the size is more manga than it is American influence, and that I think is why I'm so drawn to the Stokos and the Brandon Grahams of the world, and probably all of Oni Press, because Scott Pilgrim is also on Oni Press, and this is a trend that I like, you know. I would say American, but Stoko is Canadian, so is O'Malley, you know, but Western storytelling, manga influence. I mean, this really speaks to me, which is, I mean, it's what got me into Brandon Graham and then Scott Pilgrim and then this.
Is it just the coloring that makes Orc Stand so gross? Or it feels like there's...
No, this is a little bit less gross.
Yeah.
Like there's less warts and feces in this.
There is a lot less orc dick.
Yeah.
So much less Grunch. Less Grunch.
He's still got Grunch, but...
Yeah, exactly.
It just isn't as gross. And I think a lot of it is, you know, that we have a main character that is just, you know, handsome, default-looking white dude.
Yes, with eyeshadow.
It just looks like he doesn't sleep.
Is that what it is?
That's what I assumed.
I was getting a Johnny Depp, you know, like a...
Either one's fine with me. I like his character design, honestly.
No, yeah, that sounded like a
criticism. But like this panel here where he's got knives on his belt and a kerchief. I don't know. I really dig that. That's cool as fuck.
Do you think... This is a question that popped up when I was reading this in my head. Mm-hmm. You can identify... Stoker's style is very identifiable, quickly.
Yeah.
You can look at a book and go, oh, that... I can look at a comic book cover that Stoker has done for Marvel and go, oh, well, that's James Stoker, like, right away. And a lot of artists certainly are... That is their appeal, that they have such a unique style. Do you think that can ever be a negative? Like, it can take people out of the book?
Well, I think just today we witnessed J.H. Williams trying to wow us with style to the detriment of storytelling. And it really depends on what you're trying to accomplish that I think, you know, style or whatever can get in the way of storytelling.
I was just thinking, like, in my head, I was thinking, like, I'm trying to think, like, I was listing all the artists, like, off the top of my head. If I saw their art, I go, immediately, I knew who it was. Mm-hmm. Like, Jack Kirby. I know I can look at a Jack Kirby and go, oh, that's Jack Kirby. Mike Allred. Like, John Romita Jr. Do you think that ever, like, I don't know. I'm not sure if it's necessarily even a conscious thing. Can their style be so recognizable and so iconic that you go, you're seeing it and you're just, it's kind of coloring the book.
Well, I mean,
in a way that's not necessarily positive.
Well, yes. I mean, you look at I look at a Jim Lee book. I've already made up my mind about Jim Lee. I've already made up my mind about Kirby. I've already made up my mind about, you said JRJR, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
You pretty much, you know what you think about these people. You recognize it immediately. And basically, whatever that is, you're already coming into it. I know what I already think about Rob Liefeld's art.
Right.
So, if I was going to say, you know, any gut impulse to what you're saying, I think that it's just, you know, you're already bringing that in there. It's just, it's, and maybe I'm slightly misunderstanding your question.
I'm just like, I was thinking, like, I don't know necessarily that it's, like I said, like, conscious, like, oh, I can't read this comic because of his style. I was thinking, like, he is certainly one of those people where you're like, it pops at you.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, does it,
Is he pigeonholing himself?
Yeah, it overwhelms everything else in the book. You're like, wow, that's such a, like, does that like, when you're reading that, we read that Avengers one shot that he did, and you're like, wow, that's James Stokoe. Like, at a certain point, does his style overwhelm any kind of story he's trying to tell, regardless of what it is? Or any artist, you think that can happen, and if these guys with these very, like, and not even an artist that you come in with, like you said, like, the artists you don't like, their iconic style, like, an artist you do like their iconic style, like Brandon Graham, like Stokoe. And I think Brandon Graham has kind of gotten away a little bit from it, doing Prophet. His work in Prophet is not as, you know, is, like, it's not like King City or Multiple Warheads. He's catering to that kind of book. But this is, like, I even kind of made a note, like, could Orkstein, like, that planet be, like, a planet in this universe? Like, could we have just, like, could they just land on that planet?
Could they land on Orkstein? There actually is a drawing of One Eye in this book. Did you catch it?
I did not see it.
I'll flip through and try and find the panel.
Well, there's only, like, a billion pages in this.
Yeah, there's a few, but I will find it. It's in the later part when they're stoned.
Okay.
It's not that important, but let me sort of expand on your question a little bit. That Stokoe has kind of carved himself out an area, a following in comic books, the same way Brandon Graham has, the same way guys like Jeff Darrow have. For being that guy with that style that does that thing that people like. I think that Brandon Graham has been able to sort of shift, particularly with Prophet, that he is becoming a writer and creator and not just an artist known for drawing, you know, this one thing. He's not necessarily limited to that. Darrow is the guy you go to when you want tons of shit drawn on a page, you know? And Stokoe is this kind of the same guy. They're two peas in a pod. I think, you know, is he limiting himself? Was that what you were driving at? Does it hurt the storytelling?
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely, because it's like, if you read Shaolin Cowboy by Jeff Darrow, you don't give two shits about what's happening to that guy. You're just like, oh my God, look at all this crazy shit in the page. He's punching 13 zombies in the face and back flipping over a cow and, you know, whatever in the hell's going on. That's what it's about. And it's really, that's what this is about. It's about his crazy, depraved, imagination. He's coming up with sex bears and
I was going to ask you about the sex bear.
Sex bear was a little weird.
More than a little. It's more than a little strange.
Here's the food that has Cold War inside your guts.
Yeah. It's a, that second half of this book, the second Wonton Soup 2, as it's called.
Mm-hmm.
Inside, it's definitely more aimless than that first one. It's definitely like, here, we're on a drug trip. Here, we're on a planet where they're all clones. Here, there's like fruit that has its own ecosystem inside of it, microsystem of economy. Like, it's a, either like, you know, you could be have communists inside, or, you know, like, make you happy or sad, depending on what the civilization is like. Like, it doesn't, the food thing was another thing I was going to mention. Like, I don't know if it, you think it's successful in portraying the joy of cooking, so to speak.
I don't necessarily think so.
Like, the hallmark of that is like a Ghibli film.
Yeah.
Like, you look at the food in those movies, like, it makes me hungry. Mm-hmm. Like, I watch people cook, I'm like, that looks
yeah, this,
good.
This I don't want to eat the food in this book.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what this does remind me of. There is a I think you would classify it as Sentai. I'm kind of mushy on that because some people call Sentai manga that it's just straight up like Power Rangers,
mm-hmm.
you know, and maybe Kamen Rider or something like that. But I want to say it's a Sentai manga, certainly a shonen manga, something like One Piece, martial arts, you know, superpowered dudes. But, oh, I can't think of the name of it, but the guy is like, he's like Dragon Ball, you know, he's like Goku, except he's a chef, and he goes around the planet killing shitloads of animals, just like he wants to eat one of every animal on the earth or something like that.
Okay.
You know, he's trying to eat like every exotic dish that there is, and it's just about him, like, eating crazy shit and cooking a lot. And it made me think of this, because they're using, like, these crazy Dragon Ball Sentai, you know, moving at the speed of light powers, and but they're using it to cook food. And I think that in and of itself is a really cool idea for a comic. I feel like it's not quite executed quite the way I would want to see it done. But it's still, you know, it's an enjoyable book. Apart from, you know, being a bit of a hot mess.
I don't know what, like, these, you have very, like, clearly laid out, like, step by step of how Johnny Boyo, I don't like that name.
I do.
I don't like the Boyo thing is, you name him Johnny and Boyo, we mm-hmm. have to have both, yeah. It's a little on the nose for me, but of course this whole book is kind of like that, so I can't blame him, I guess. Like very clearly laying out this food, and then the food just looks kind of, I don't know. I think that if you're going to be drawing a chef a book, and despite what it is, even if it's like some like monstrous alien that he's cooking, like the food should still look good at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Like him, I don't know. It feels strange to me that he's this master chef. Master culinary student, and the food still kind of looks like, the point is that the food looks gross sometimes. I guess it matches the Stoko's aesthetic to a certain extent, so it doesn't matter.
You do kind of ignore it, which is ridiculous. It's like it wants to be about food, but it's really not.
Yeah.
Because of exactly what you're saying. It kind of fails to be about food. But that's the thing, is Stoko kind of doesn't like drawing things. He can make something like appealing, but you don't know why. Like it's ugly, but appealing.
Mm-hmm.
Orc Stain is ugly, but appealing.
Mm-hmm.
He can't make things look just classically nice looking. And I think that's kind of, you have to make food look good. You have to make it kind of glossed over and appealing.
Sumptuous.
And beautiful. Yeah. It's not within him to do it.
You mentioned not be able to make things look. I was going to ask you about that his Johnny's girlfriend, I guess she mm-hmm. is. Citrus. That's the name.
Yeah.
How do you feel? What are your thoughts on her?
What am I supposed to think about her? She looks,
I don't know.
She looks
like a person.
Yes, she looks very normal.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that stood out to me. Because I was like thinking like, as I was reading this, I'm like, this feels very much like a Brandon Graham book. in a certain extent. And then, I don't know, his bow, I was expecting, I don't know, something less ordinary, which I'm not, and that's certainly not, actually, that's not really an insult. That's kind of, I think, actually a compliment.
Mm-hmm.
Because it subverted my expectations, which I actually enjoyed. But I think she stands out in this book, I guess, is the thing.
Yeah.
Like, everything else is, like you said, like, even the food looked weird and gross, like it's made out of aliens. And, like the character looks like a manga character with eyeliner, like a white guy with manga hair, mm-hmm. with knives on his belt and a kerchief.
I'm gonna start rolling up around that. That's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna wear a kerchief. Yeah, with knives on my belt. It's gonna be good.
You're not careful. You're gonna get in the Fred from Scooby Doo comparison.
It's okay.
With a kerchief, that's all right with you?
Sure.
Okay. I don't know. She seems very, like, everything else in this book, it seems very over designed, like, I mean that in a good way.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's really his MO is lots of lines, lots of detail, just really, really go at it. But I mean, right. if you think about the one girl character in Orkstein.
Yeah.
Very much stood out in that world as well. And I think it's kind of the same thing is he'll make the dudes look weird or goofy or ugly or put all kinds of crazy detail into their face. He won't do it to women, but he won't necessarily go out of his way to make them look like Victoria's Secret models.
Right.
I mean, they still look like pretty girls and they're, you know, they have appeal.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this girl looks more like, I almost want to say she's ripped off of Ramona Flowers.
Yeah, that's, I mean, she looks like a manic pixie dream girl.
Yeah.
I want to talk about that drug sequence for a bit.
Ugh, okay.
Specifically about, like, when it comes down to the point where they take the one drug, mm-hmm. and then in their vision under that one drug, they decide to take another, to smoke the whatever crystal thing it is that's supposed to take them out of it, and then it, like, devolves into, like, minuscule panels that eventually the next page, it, like, breaks out of the book.
Those minuscule panels is where One Eye is, by the way.
Is he? Okay.
He's on the right side, sort of in the middle.
Oh, I see him. There he is. Yeah, yep. He has, what's-his-face's head.
Yes.
Okay. But then the next page, the next two pages are, like, Stoko in his room on a couch with some monster, and then a whole bunch of blank pages telling us to fill in the blanks.
The reality is he probably actually got high and drew a bunch of that shit.
I don't know what, it just seems out of place in this book, the decision to suddenly, like, I can understand, like, oh, let's just kind of the second book just kind of go crazy with the plot and they go on a drug trip and then they wind up on this planet. But then to suddenly have a couple pages where, oh, look, he's a blank, a whole bunch of blank page, like blank panels, and then, oh, we wake up.
And that's the thing that I take away from this book is this was not published because it's a great work of literature. This is published because, oh man, look at this insane guy that puts crazy, weird ideas in his book and draw us wacky shit, we should probably put some ink on paper. It's a very minimal risk, and we'll sell this stupid book to people. It's, I don't know. I think I don't particularly like any guy. I don't really care for too many, like, drug references and stoner humor.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
Most of it just does not work for me. You know, if the appeal is to enjoy watching people get high. I don't care.
You're supposed to relate, Eric, because you do drugs all the time.
Yeah, that's clearly not me.
I'm just getting back to this sex bear. What the hell?
I think that I want to say that everything that he draws comes from a conversation with him and Brandon Graham in like the middle of the night. They're like, they're probably getting high and like eating pizza. And they're like, funny as a sex bear. And it's got all these tits and it's all going.
And then a dude falls in love with it.
Yeah, man, that dude would be so funny. Oh, dude, this pizza's so good, man, dude.
My tubby little love goddess.
Dude, sex bear.
I don't know. I would have been happy if it ended after that first volume.
Yeah, and honestly, it did.
That's
and then
true.
They released another an book, and then they collected them all, and they don't. I don't really care about. I agree with you, but the whole second part, it's if you just take it on the level that he's drawing weird shit, and he barely cares about what's going on. Because that's what I take away from it. He barely gives a damn about what he's saying with the book, quote unquote saying.
I know. For all the books we've read that are in that vein, I'd say this is actually the strongest. The ones that are at least the storytelling is the strongest.
Mm. Well, that's the thing. He shows potential as a storyteller, even at this early point. And I say early. This was really not. It's not like this was 1,100 years ago. This was 7 years ago.
Do you want to get into another kind of indie art debate?
You can't stop that train. Let's hear it.
Oh, okay. Brandon Graham has been on a spree of answering questions on his Tumblr.
Yes, I have seen it.
You've seen it? Okay. And this is, I haven't caught all of them. Some of them are, like, someone asked him what his thoughts on Bendis were, and instead of answering it, he, like...
All of them, he just posts a picture.
Now, this one, he thought he was asking about some obscure character from, like, some manga from, like, the early 90s, and so he posted a picture of that, and was like, I really like this character, and then completely ignored answer question about Bendis, but...
That sounds like something
there was some anonymous, most likely a troll, but I think it at least raises an interesting discussion about they were criticizing like both Brandon Graham and more specifically Stoko about, you know, mm-hmm. how much work they do. Like, you know, Stoko has done Wonton Soup and Orkstein and the Godzilla book. And like they go, yeah, you take forever to do anything and blah, 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 blah. You know, and they're very critical about their work ethic. Mm-hmm. Et cetera, et cetera. And how, you know, you look at other comics and they come out very, very, you know, pretty, very fast. And then of course, Brandon Graham being pretty much inherently opposed to
right.
both DC and Marvel. He only does creator owned work exclusively. You know, he's like, that's, you know, I don't want to, me or Stoko, we're not interested in working, you know, doing slave labor and, you know, it's not about how much work you put out. It's about putting out stuff that you like doing. Do you think that attitude does them a disservice by not that they don't do work for Marvel or DC, because mm-hmm. that's certainly within their rights to do work that's only owned by them, and I certainly can respect that. But the fact that they could do more if they worked harder, so to speak. I don't want to sound like I'm being critical of their work ethic because.
Well, that's the thing.
Any comics artist, they work their asses off. So
I agree with that. And I'm not going to say anything about their work ethic because when you're doing a creative owned book and there is one fucking name on the cover, that is tremendously more work than five guys dividing the labor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Stoko did all the drawing, all the inking, all the writing, all the coloring, all the mm-hmm. lettering, all the design, everything. on Orcstein. That's right. A fuck ton of work. I don't know. I have tried to draw a comic before. I was doing it with a good friend of mine, and he burned out, and then I burned out. It is a lot of work. You know, you spend 8 hours a day doing a page.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of work for something that you can read in 20 minutes.
Right.
And to be fair, Marvel and DC really do not pay a lot of their younger, unestablished artists very much money.
No, they don't.
I mean, compared to the time they put, but I mean, a lot of artists just sort of have to pay their dues. That's the unfortunate thing about it is.
Well, in an industry where.
Well, I mean, that's the only way you can separate the wheat from the chaff. I myself have hired a lot of young artists to work underneath me, and you can never tell just by talent alone who's going to make it and who's not. I don't think Brandon Graham would be taken advantage of by Marvel or DC. I think he's at a very strong position where he's got a following, and that following would come with him to like if he drew a Spider-Man book,
mm-hmm.
that following would come with him and read that book. You know, Stoko did that Avengers 100th anniversary book.
Mm-hmm.
He did it exactly the way he wanted to. We came along because we were fans.
Yep.
And we liked it. It was the only book that we liked in that series.
Yeah, it was. The rest were terrible. was good.
Yeah, they were kind of on the terrible side. But would I like to see more work from these guys? Yeah. I don't hate that Brandon Graham takes his time and does exactly what he wants.
Mm-hmm.
I don't hate that since Scott Pilgrim, Brian Lee O'Malley has only done one book. Because that book came out and I liked it. I liked it quite a lot. And there's different schools of thought, and it's not like he's lazing about doing nothing.
Well, I think that a lot of people who aren't artists expect everyone to be Jack Kirby.
Yeah.
Who could draw a comic in 2 weeks or three, you know, he could draw three comics a month.
Yeah.
Just like a workhorse.
Right.
And I don't. Not well, everyone is that can do that.
No,
not everyone should.
Not everyone should. People have it. It's the kind of thing. I can't remember exactly what the phenomenon's called. I think it's the Dunning-Kruger effect. I'm not sure, but it's where people who are novices or are unskilled at something,
mm-hmm.
they don't realize the depth that there is in that thing. So like they're a novice and they think they're great at it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the effect that gets average or, you know, slightly better than bad singers to get on American Idol thinking they're great because maybe they're good at karaoke or maybe they're this or maybe they're that. And they're just horrified and embarrassed and everyone makes fun of them.
Right.
But it's a very common thing that people legitimately like just don't understand. And that's part of growing as an artist is working through that. But this sounds like the criticism of someone just who has no fucking clue.
Right. I don't know. I don't understand a lot of I think it's an interesting discussion about, you know, quality versus quantity and et cetera, but I think we both agree that, you know, they put out work when they want to and it speaks for itself.
Mm-hmm.
And Orcstein is great.
Orcstein is really wonderful.
Yeah. And this is even as the kind of the indie books, the meandering indie books that we read from time to time, this is certainly has more direction than a lot of it. And his art, his tremendous art goes a long way in making it interesting and fun to read, even if it's, especially that second volume is kind of just, hey, let's draw Sex Bear.
Yep, let's draw Sex Bear and get high.
And he did draw it. He did a Godzilla book. He certainly doesn't own the rights to Godzilla. So he's not as adamant about it as
Brandon. Yeah, he's certainly more flexible.
Anything else you want to touch on specifically, Eric?
No, I think it's interesting that this book has led to so much discussion. It seems like we've barely talked about the book.
I mean, it's not as much Orc Dick. It's a fun book. I would suggest this. I would say if you're going to get into Stokoe's work, read Orcstein. That seems strange to me that I'm.
Yeah, that you're recommending, the book full of dicks over the book about
Orcstein is the gateway book.
Yeah.
But I think it really is. I think its overall quality is better, so that is the book that's the entry level James Stokoe book is the Orc Dick book.
I'd say the entry level books are probably the Godzilla and the Avengers.
Oh, I guess.
You're
just afraid of the Orc Dick, Eric. I see you're just afraid of some Gronch.
Nah, man, bring it on.
Jesus.
You missed the there's no video for that.
Oh, too bad.
I know. You're the only one that got to see that.
I know, it's not a video podcast. Would you recommend this to anyone, a Stokoe fan?
Well, Stokoe fans should already be reading this.
They probably already are. But
Brandon Graham fans should probably already know about it. I'd say that it's consistent with what Oni does.
Right, it is.
You know, so people that like Scott Pilgrim, I would say, here's something. You know, it's a little weird. You buy it because you like the art. And if you like this, you should check out Orcstein. It's a better story. He's really gotten his sea legs of writing.
It's just grosser.
It is certainly gross.
That's the hurdle.
It makes no sense that it's as good as it is. It's like a pug? Like it's so ugly it's cute? That's exactly. Yeah. It's so gross it's good. It doesn't
make
any
Jagger.
Sense. Yeah, it's exactly. It's like Pug McJagger.
Pug McJagger.
Yeah,
but I think we can wrap it up there.
I think we need to shut up, or we'll just be here forever.
Right, it's true. We don't have to. The next episode will not be next week. It'll be the week after. We already mentioned, and we'll be having our award show. No Nerd Boy Book Club.
You're off the hook.
Yep. Don't have to read anything. We still have floppies, still checking in, but we will instead be handing out handies to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Handy after handy after handy after handy.
Lube yourself up, y'all.
So we'll see you in 2 weeks, guys. We'll be handing out what we consider the best ofs for 2014. I think we'll come to a close after lots of talking. We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, all your pod catchers. If you like us, listen to us, please rate, review, subscribe, any of those places. More reviews, more subscriptions we have, more people see us, more people find us out. Tell your friends, tell your buddies about us as well. We want to grow. We like seeing new listeners. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/HandsomeBoysComicsHour, Twitter at HBCHour. You email us, handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com. We'd like to hear pretty much anything, you know, as long as it's not just racial epithets. Please don't send me those, but anything else is great. You can find me online at Twitter at MixMrCereal. I am sleepy. I'm having trouble spelling things. MixMasTercereal. Eric, where can they find you online?
Was awesome. I know. I hope I can talk. You can see my portfolio by going to freewillunlimited.com and see most of the things I get up to online, including my Pinterest and my Tumblr, by going to ericzgoodnight.com. And while you're at it, you can tweet at me. My Twitter handle is Mr. Bad Example, spelled M-R Bad Example. Badow.
With that, folks, we'll call it a day. Have a good one.
Rock and roll.